And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a very fantastic and exciting episode of Film Fracas. Not in space, but in the wizarding world.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
This week, we are talking about some very exciting things. And with me, as always, is Robbie, Percival, Wolfric, Brian, DeShazer.
That's me. What's up? What's up? I got a really long name.
Britt, the Sorcerer Stone Johnson.
Happy to be here.
And Carter, did you put your name on the Goblet of Fire? Spilliards.
Did I?
Did you? Care to weigh in?
Did you?
Put my name in the Goblet of Fire?
No, he did not.
I didn't.
Well, I guess he didn't then.
I didn't do it.
Oh, good. This week we're going to be discussing the best Harry Potter. That is the best Daniel Radcliffe performance of
We're ranking the... Radcliffes.
Oh, yes.
Ranking Radcliffes. It's the name of my autobiography.
That's not the name of your autobiography. That's not the one you told me.
Ranking Radcliffes.
I thought it was poorly timed joke.
Yeah, it is the actual name of my autobiography.
Poorly timed joke.
It's a hyphenated title. There's multiple parts.
Ranking Radcliffes. : poorly timed jokes - the life and times of Carter Spilliards by Carter Spilliards
... or is it?
Or is
oh, I thought you were gonna be like and then like list two real writers like Carter got his book ghost wrote
by J.K. Rowling
written.
And
ghost written
John
anyway.
Yes, we're ranking Radcliffes. So what that means. So we'll be looking at all of these fantastic five remaining films and ranking them by Daniel Radcliffe performances as the one and only Harry Potter. So could also be known as Best Harry.
The Most Harry?
The Most Harry? The Harriest?
The guy, you beat me to it. All right, Shannon, why don't you start us off?
Let's go!
Okay, so at the top of my list this week, I had... Part two of the Deathly Hallows, as I thought that it was the most mature performance of Daniel Radcliffe. I'm looking at my notes, and I'm thinking of particularly the moment where he's interacting with Snape while Snape is dying. That, I think, is a scene that requires a lot of emotional range and ability to get in touch with... some pretty dark, complex emotions. And I think the fact that he'd known Alan Rickman, rest in peace, I'm sorry, Alan Rickman for such a long time and kind of grew up with him.
Can we just refer to everyone in the movies as like their
Alan
first
Radcliffe,
name and then Radcliffe?
Emma Radcliffe. Rupert Radcliffe.
You know, both of the Dumbledores. Who actually aren't Radcliffes at all.
I think there actually is another Radcliffe, like Mark Radcliffe. He's a producer. Anyway,
Let us continue.
Anyway, I had for the scene in which he is with Snape as he dies, the moment where he is kind of conversing with his dead loved ones, we see kind of this really great Daniel Radcliffe moment with the how dare you stand where he stood. He perfects his ability to scream dramatically, I think very well throughout the progression of the series, because it happens a decent amount. And I think the how dare you stand where he stood really is the pinnacle of that yell acting fruition. And the epilogue as well. I mean, to be able to interact with younger actors and aside from any of the makeup, aside from some whatever thoughts we may have about how the epilogue should look, I thought that it was a very believable performance. It was a very heartwarming performance. And it's, you know, something that only he could do, obviously, because, you know, he'd been on this journey the entire time. What has everybody else got?
I have some counterpoints to the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Okay.
Like hard.
Yeah, my
hard
my answer when you said Part 2 was not that.
Yes.
Okay. We're fracassing from the get-go.
What do you have instead?
So instead, we'll get to that later. Instead, what?
No, go,
well,
go,
just
go,
tell
go.
Us what you have. And then
okay,
we'll...
yeah. So I have Prisoner of Azkaban first.
Interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I thought this one was... So kind of how I viewed this was through the lens of like each each movie he's growing, right? And so he's growing not only as a character, but as an actor. And so it's like, which film does he bring the most kind of like depth and like complexity to it? And so like part of where I'm at with Deathly Hallows Part 2 is that when, by the time you get there, I don't know that he brings anything new to what he's already doing. He's just kind of turning in a consistent performance with what he'd already done. But like in Prisoner of Azkaban, he's definitely like, this is the first time you get him really kind of leaning into some actual dramatic acting. Like you get Harry like truly, truly angry. Like he's going to murder Sirius Black. And it's like that moment of him just screaming and agonizing by the Shrieking Shack, like out in the snow. Like, it's a little hammy, but it's also, like, not too much. It's to the point of, like, how a kid would react.
It's not hammy at all. Yeah, I will defend to my dying day that scene is not hammy.
And it's, like, it's very, like, he's still a kid because he's still, like, 13 at this point. And so it's very much, like, a 13-year-old kid is, like, I'm going to murder the guy who got my parents murdered. And it's, like, you have that, and then you have the kind of, like, the fear that he gets, like seeing Lupin transforming. You have the moment of like realizing that Sirius is like on his side, and you get that kind of like he has this almost like hopefulness in his eyes, and it's with these like looks in the playing between him and Gary Oldman that he's like truly like, do you think I could come in, you know, actually live with you? This kind of hopefulness. Right. And it's something that you never had really seen in him before. Mm-hmm. Like you'd seen happiness when he reaches Hogwarts. But it's like you have this hopefulness in it that wasn't there before. You have a lot of him just like going around the castle being like, what do we do? Like, how do I find him? And so I think this one is maybe the most, especially coming off of the first two movies where he was doing really well. But in this one, he really kind of broadens his acting range. So that's why I have this one number one.
Yeah. I have Prisoner of Azkaban number one kind of for that last point that you said. Because like first two movies, it's like they're just kind of like the fun fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, it's a franchise, but it's your kind of run-of-the-mill fantasy movie, and it's like young Harry Potter kind of not getting into shenanigans, but like, oh, what do we do? Let's go do it. Okay, we did it. And then Prisoner of Azkaban, like, is kind of like, it is that movie where everything kind of like takes a little bit of a turn, mm-hmm. and he like really shows that, like his performance really shows like Harry having to like kind of like make that rapid like maturity and really being like, oh, like this is my life now, this is what I'm going to have to do. And then like, yeah, him, that scene where he's like, I hope he finds me, because when he does, like, I'm gonna kill him. And that scene, like, that has stuck with me throughout, like, since the first time I saw that movie. And kind of to a little similar to what Carter said with Deathly Hallows Part 2, like, it is like it's a good performance, it's a consistently good performance. But it's just, yeah, I'm not sure that there's, like, I'm not sure, like, what all it adds besides just being, like, a good performance.
To me, like, and we'll talk about it a little later, but to me in Deathly Hallows Part 2, like, there isn't, like, the saddest parts of Deathly Hallows Part 2 and, like, most tragic parts aren't as tragic as, like, the moment at the end of Part 1, like, with Dobby.
Yeah.
So it's, like, nowhere in does Part 2 does he nearly reach, like, the emotional depth of that part in Part 1.
I think that's fair. I definitely think that's fair. And in full defense of Prisoner of Azkaban, which is my number two pick, it's an incredible movie for a reason, and it's memorable in the trio's performance for a reason. And I think what particularly stands out to me that I sometimes gloss over in that film is the moment where he's hoping that Patronus, and thinking that the Patronus is cast by his mm-hmm. father. That's my dad. Like, I don't know how it happened, but I think it was him. It's you know, that ability to grapple with his parents' death in a different way that doesn't seem trite or done before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain amount of tragedy in that definitely, like, these are all tools that Daniel Radcliffe is building and building upon until you get to that last movie and everything comes to fruition. I think that's the way I saw his performance in Part 2. Definitely, but the experimenting ground and his freedom to do that really, really comes alive in Prisoner of Azkaban and some of those other movies, especially Rest in Peace, The Goblet of Fire. But, Robbie.
All right. So yes, Deathly Hallows Part 2, a lot lower on my list, frankly. And I think my big reason for picking the first part of that over the second part is because by nature of what it is, I feel like a lot of the growth and emotional depth all happens at the front part of that story, at the beginning of... Because you're looking at splitting the seventh book into two parts, and I feel like a lot of the emotional depth, the growing, the learning, all happens in part one, whereas part two is a lot of execution and follow-through on that. And because of that, I feel like you get a lot more opportunities to act, whereas there's just, you know, a good chunk of that movie is spent on action, it's a good chunk of that movie is spent on payoff, whereas I think the growing and the learning and the acting all happens in part one. That being said, my number one is actually The Order of the Phoenix. It's a very good one. And when my top three were a hard three to put in place, but I will say that I think I decided that while there's a lot of emotional depth to Harry in The Prisoner of Azkaban, while there's a lot of emotional depth to The Deathly Hallows Part One, he doesn't have, I think the great thing about The Order of the Phoenix is I think it's the movie where he has the most people to interact with, and he has the best supporting actors to also prop up his fantastic performance, in that you get to see his relationship with Sirius develop a lot more. You get to see him play against Umbridge, who she does she's fantastic, and to watch Harry to have like an adversary who is so openly adversarial, like is so openly in the way of his wants and needs. I mean, up until that point, most of your antagonists have been, you know, in the shadows, kind of waiting around until the last, you know, the third act to pop out and make all the little things come together and to this one big fight. Whereas you see, you know, Harry have to deal with something that is actively pushing against him the entire time. I think you get to see with him interact with a lot more students in a role that I think really Harry as a character was always meant to be, which was kind of this teacher leader role that I think Daniel Radcliffe portrays really well. I feel triumphant every time, even just watching him walk around the room while everyone's getting their Patronus right. Like the actual pride that you see come over Daniel Radcliffe's face as he, you know, just watches his friends become the wizards he knows that they can be. And then watching it all break down, you know, when they're about to die in the Ministry of Prophecies or whatever it's called, but that whole battle, like watching his reactions to everything going on, watching him, you know, realize how hopeless he kind of is. And you get some of the ones that are left. I think you also probably get some of the best Dumbledore Harry moments together, which is a winning combination in any of the movies, which is why it is such an important part. So that's my argument for Order of the Phoenix. But to me, it sounds like by basic majority, The Prisoner of Azkaban takes number one.
Mm-hmm. Looks like it.
I have Order of the Phoenix somewhat high. So
I have Order of the Phoenix number two.
Oh, do you?
For kind of a lot of the same reasons as Robbie's, because I thought it was interesting because Harry does have the most people to act off of in it, which really really helps, because when he is teaching everybody and showing that triumphant, much more confident, I never thought Harry was destined to become a leader or have a leadership role, but then seeing him take on that responsibility and take on that mantle of teacher and the way he pulls it off, I'm like, oh wow, this is cool, this is good, I like this. But then also when they're doing occlusion, is that what it's called?
Occlumency?
Occlumency.
Oh yeah.
I love those.
I chose not to say anything.
And because Dumbledore ignores him pretty much the entire movie, and the way he's just so desperately, it's just pure desperation in his voice.
Screams at him, look at me.
And he's I think about it, I'm 99% sure the entire cast just kind of ignored Daniel Radcliffe for an extended period of time. Then we're okay, go do this scene. And then I'm blanking on
have
Dumbledore's
actor's name.
Have them
do a bunch of just walking around scenes zero direction.
Is Michael Gambon?
Michael Gambon, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Gambon is just kind of no, I'm not doing the scene, and starts walking away. And then Daniel Radcliffe's look at me, goddammit, we're doing the scene kind of thing. Yeah. But it's and then when Voldemort possesses him at the end, and it's seeing a little bit of poison
really
and evil. come out through
him, like possessed. It's always standing out. It's like stood just out, cause like standing out. Stood. We're just
when I wrote full when of, you when you got when your I ghost book, when I ghost wrote
ghost wrote and I stand it out.
And so yeah, I feel like there's just so much like just range in Order of the Phoenix from like the triumph to the watching everything crumble to like the shrieking and desperation to the hope and just like it's all over the place and it's.
And I think it's all over the place in Prisoner of Azkaban.
The only place I kind of knock it a little bit is at like the very, very end where he's like, we got something Voldemort doesn't. Something worth fighting for, which is like just...
That's more of the writing.
Yeah. Like, I know, but like...
There's only so many ways
it's hard not to ham up that line a little bit.
So that's why it's like, even though it is kind of the reading, it is still like... Yeah. It is kind of a cheesy scene, which is literally like my only real knock against it. And it's not entirely his fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I say is like, it is the... You know, you get the highest of the highs in those triumphant moments, and you get the lowest of the lows at times, especially when you watch Sirius die and you watch, you know, the realization cross Harry's face that he has no family left.
Yeah, you've got a lot of, there's a lot of stuff. Like, I really like, he goes, really runs like the gambit of emotions in that movie, because at the beginning, he's
For such a short movie,
too. And at the beginning, he's just kind of confused. Because of like all the ministry stuff that's happening, he doesn't know if he's been expelled. He doesn't know what's going on at the ministry. He's kind of being like shuffled around through all these different people to like, go to his trial.
His bureaucracy like, whiplash by like, the end of the first 15
like,
minutes.
He's like, what the hell is going on? And he conveys that whole thing really well. And when Dumbledore comes and defends him in his trial, and then he immediately like storms out, and Harry's just like, wait, Professor Dumbledore. And then he doesn't get him, and it's like. It's one of those things where, like, that's never happened before.
Yeah.
And then, like, going into the leader role is a new role for Harry that you don't see him in. And playing off Umbridge, like, I love the I must not tell lies. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes back, it feels super earned.
Yeah.
And then, like, Sirius's death and then his anger. And it's a through line with Harry's character is his first instinct is usually anger. And it's interesting. To kind of see that in the different movies.
Yeah. That being said, like, the Prisoner of Azkaban stuff was also very good. It's my number two.
Yeah.
So just putting that out there for scorekeeping purposes.
So your number two was Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes.
My number two, so Order of the Phoenix is number three for me. My number two is the Sorcerer's Stone. And it's because you can't have the rest of it If his performance wasn't successful in this.
Okay, this was an idea I struggled with a lot because I was thinking of other things and Sorcerer's Stone unfortunately just kept getting pushed down and I feel bad about where it is.
But
on
I'm
the
like,
list.
But I'm like, Sorcerer's Stone.
With you, Robbie,
it's not the bottom, but it's also like.
Like, Sorcerer's Stone to me is like. It's. You had to capture that like childhood wonder that he has. I mean, he is a child. He's like.
He's 12. He's
12.
11.
He's 12 or 11 when they made it. And he nails it because it's like Harry easily could have come across as like stupid or dumb, but he doesn't. He comes across
as a jerk.
He comes across as naive, which is exactly what he should be. And it's kind of like as this world is unfolding around him and he learns more and more about it, his kind of like his journey in as it's beginning and like learning more about magic, learning more about how things go, him just kind of like, you know, learning about new things and different magic things. And then when he's faced with this new enemy and it's like him realizing he has to become the hero that he's up until this point. Cause you have to think like his destiny has only just been told to him. And then within the span of this year, he suddenly is facing his greatest enemy again. And you kind of feel that weight, I think, in his performance. And especially from a child actor at the time, you get a lot out of him from like being a child. Cause like, Ron is very much kind of, I think, kind of cheesier, like hams it up a bit from like a child.
She's got to get her priorities. Yeah,
from like a child actor point of view. But I think that Daniel Radcliffe has a surprising amount of nuance in that first one. And especially at the, like him looking in the mirror of Era Sed, like that, it's a beautiful nuanced moment. Him creeping around the library, like seeing Snape and Quirrell and he's like his fear. It's like, am I going to get caught? And it's like I said, it's one of those things that like, if he didn't nail that, cause he's Harry Potter and it's the Harry Potter series. So it's like, if he didn't nail that, then
it wouldn't have gone beyond.
And so it's like, you have to give him props for fucking hitting that, like, hitting it dead on.
I agree with everything you say, and it pains me where it falls on my list, but it's not like I said, it's not out on my list, but mm-hmm. it's in a rougher spot than I'd want it to be. So Prisoner of Azkaban was my number two. So everything you guys have said about it and more, I mean,
And your number two is Prisoner of Azkaban, or Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix.
You're a prisoner. Okay. My number three was Order of the Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to put number two Order of the Phoenix?
Yeah. I think that's how it would shake out.
With it being my number one, it probably shakes
Yeah. Because for me, it was kind of interchangeable between Sorcerer's Stone and Order of the Phoenix. Because like Order of the Phoenix to me had a lot more like new stuff that he was doing.
Yeah.
But then Sorcerer's Stone, I was very much like, this is like the foundation of everything. And it's like, had he not nailed that, then it wouldn't, like, then, you know, he couldn't have gotten the growth to five. So it's kind of like one feeds to the other.
Yeah. So that moves us to my number three. What's everyone's number three?
My number three was Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix. Brett? Sorry, you took a sip right as I said your name. My number three, just to give Brett a second to swallow. I actually had Deathly Hallows Part 1 specifically. For the reasons I was talking about why it ended up better than Part 2 in my mind, I think that it's probably one of the better trio movies, just with those moments with them on the run in the woods, like watching, you know, the realization that the three of them have been a great team because of the boundaries that Hogwarts gives them almost, and watching that break down when like there's not really an adult in charge or, you know, someone to say, well, now you can't sneak around the court. You know, like there's not like when the structure of Hogwarts is gone, watching it break down and watching them really get to each other and watching, you know, Ron and Harry, who you would think could never do anything wrong to each other, just lose it, you know, as well as just those emotional like plummets of watching Dobby like die in Harry's arms on the beach. Like that's, and to see, you know, Daniel Radcliffe act against what's essentially a tennis ball on a stick.
Yeah.
Like maybe they made a full life model for that scene, but like he's
worst case scenario, it's a tennis ball.
He's.
Because, like, you know, like, in the Sorcerer's Stone, like, any creature is just...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, my number three was Sorcerer's Stone, just because, like, a lot of it is kind of, like, this was, like, the genesis of it. This was, like, the bedrock. This is, like, kind of where they have to go from. And, like, for as far as child actors go, it's, like, especially, like, at the time, you had, like, maybe, like... four to a handful really good child actors.
They're all brand new too. No one had ever seen any of them in anything before.
Exactly. Because it's like
Daniel Radcliffe had been in like some minor bit parts. Nothing of any note.
Because like the only like
student number two in ITV's whatever.
Something like that. Because like
he was in the BBC David Copperfield.
Yeah. Oh really? Yeah, that's what he did.
Because I feel like the only like actual like big name child actor at the time was probably like Haley Joel Osment or something like that.
That was who they originally wanted.
Like that makes that was who Spielberg.
That was who Spielberg. Yeah, that was who Spielberg wanted for Harry Potter when he was going to direct it.
Makes a whole lot of sense. But yeah, it's just like coming in and like kind of just like showing his chops. Like, again, granted, it is just kind of like, oh, here's a fantasy movie, good versus evil. It's nothing like super deep, but like he does manage to do a good job with it. And there was some point I had, but nuts to that. But seeing him like act against like the cave troll and then like acting against like all the magic that everybody else casts, because he does not cast a single spell in that movie.
Yeah.
That's something I...
He flies on a broom.
He does not cast a spell. Flying on a broom is not casting a spell.
He says, up and the broom comes up.
But then...
He doesn't on purpose. He makes the glass go away.
But then also, the Quidditch man, acting against nothing but effects, like, which is tough for, like, even just, like, a good, like adult actor to do. Yeah. And seeing these kids do it, like, pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, again, like, the only part that I think is a little cheesy is just when he's there in the room with Quirrell and all the fire spouts up. He's like, give me the stone. He's just like, never. And it's like, that's the one part where it's just kind of like... He did the best that he could with it.
There's a moment in all of these films where Harry kind of hams it up a little bit.
Yeah, except like it's just to varying degrees, so it's not that bad.
Well, and I love the bit at the beginning with the birthday cake and the sand.
Happy birthday, Harry.
Happy birthday, Harry. That's always, I'm always like, oh, that's so sad.
And just like, and like the, like.
He's so earnest too.
And like, kind of like the like fear that's been like, like at the beginning when he's with the Dursleys and they're yelling at him, just like the panic and just like fear in his like eyes and his mannerisms. It's just very much like, I can't mess up or they're going to be mean to me, like, kind of thing. Like
pure joy at all the letters when they start flying through everything. He's like, ha ha, woo.
Making it rain instead of opening one of them.
Yes.
And so it's just like, is it him cradling a dying elf in his arms and being super sad? Like, no, but like you had to start somewhere with it. And just I tried really hard to justify, like, I'm not putting it this high just because it's the first one. I thought hard about this. But part one is my number four.
It's also my number four.
Oh, cool. I can deal with Sorcerer's Stone and part one flipping. I'm not, you don't have to convince me.
We're on number three right
now.
Number
three.
We are.
Never mind. It's my number. No, because hold on. Let me look.
Wait a second.
It is my, part one is my number four.
Oh, okay. Wait. There's more.
Yeah.
Well, since it looks like we're coming up to deciding our final three.
So wait, what are we at for number three?
It sounds like Sorcerer's Stone.
Sorcerer's Stone.
Because you had it at number two. I have it at number three. Robbie has it at four.
I do have it at four.
Okay. Then Shannon had it at three, right?
Sorcerer's Stone?
Yeah.
I actually have it as my number five pick.
Oh, what's your number three?
My number three pick is The Order of the Phoenix, and my number four pick is part one of Deathly Hallows. I mean, it's a testament to Daniel Radcliffe that literally every single movie he's in the series is pretty decent, if not fantastic. But yeah, that's where it shook out for me.
Okay.
All right. Well, we will take a quick break to figure out what some of the math looks like here. Just so you guys know, we only have our first and second, for number one being The Prisoner of Azkaban, number two being The Order of the Phoenix. We will be right back after this. And we're back.
Hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
I think we figured this out. I think it kind of shakes out to Sorcerer's Stone being number three. And then I think it sounds like Deathly Hallows Part One is shaking out at number four.
Yes. But let's
talk about
it. Let's still talk about these things.
So with Deathly Hallows Part One, I why are you making a face, Brett?
Because I thought we had established it. But and kind of like talked about these.
I hadn't talked about. I haven't talked about Deathly Hallows Part One yet. Forbid,
we can't have a 25-second end of the show.
No,
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I really like Deathly Hallows Part One for a few reasons. I think it's perhaps Daniel Radcliffe's most layered performance. I think he doesn't say a lot for a long part of this movie, but you get a lot on his face. You get a lot of like the inner turmoil he's going through. The kind of like, you can really feel the weight of the situation on him and the stress of when he's like, and he Ron basically vocalizes it when he's like, we already have one and we're no closer to destroying it, when they're kind of blowing up and he's like, oh, did you think we'd be finding Horcruxes?
This would be?
Yeah, did you think
staying
we'd be finding
five-star
hotels, finding Horcrux every other day?
Get out of here.
Like, I love that moment. I love
can't do that. There's only seven of them.
Yeah, I love
I've been out here a month.
I absolutely love when they go to Godric's Hollow and him just like seeing his parents' grave in the house like destroyed, and just the shot of him like staring over the grave, like he's got, you know, tears in his eyes.
There also at the beginning there has to be a lot of Daniel Radcliffe's.
Yes. That's also impressive when he like acts as seven different characters.
For a second, when I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't know how much I count. And I was like,
well, no, it's his performance.
Yeah, he's his performing as everyone being
as like seven. It's another. Yeah.
Yeah. I started thinking about the episode of The Good Place, Janet's, where Darcy Carton had to be every character. And I was like, he did the same thing.
It's an incredibly impressive sequence.
And to bounce off of that, he also does voiceover for, I forget who the adult actor is, him with the polyjuice potion in the ministry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're like all three of them, even. They're.
Yeah, they all.
Whoever those actors are, they do.
Or is that at the beginning? Is that not at the beginning of two?
No. It's when they break into the ministry.
Oh, when they break
into
the
beginning of Deathly Part One.
Because there's also Polyjuice later in Part Two.
Yeah, but that's when they get the. That's when they get the locket.
Yeah, they get the locket from Umbridge. Ron.
When Polyjuice juice potion suddenly becomes very easy to come by.
But just the fact that like they're there, like literally acting against nothing. They're in a booth doing voiceover for. Yeah. These random other people, it's also like, damn, like they can also do voiceover too. That's a good skill to have.
Yeah.
Like it's impressive.
Yeah. And it's one of those things like There are two moments that I think are two of the most like emotionally harrowing moments in this series. And one of them is at the end of four when he comes back with Cedric's body and he's just like distraught. And he's like, he told me he'd bring his body back. I promised I would. And he's like, basically, you know,
he's blubbering and
blubbering, like suffering and, yeah, serious trauma in that moment.
Just watch somebody die.
Yeah. And then at the end of this one with Dobby, his just when he's holding him and he just is like, help me do something. And it's just like that moment of just desperation and sadness. Like it's part of what sells that moment. Cause like, not only is it sad that, you know, Dobby, who's this very kind of innocent, helpless person, is dying, but it's like his grief with that. And he's like, I'm going to bury him. I'm going to do it right.
Like, yeah.
I think that maturity in the end really is like the last major growth that you see from him. Because like I said, I didn't think that there was anything in part one that quite leveled that.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Or anything in part two that quite leveled that in part one.
Yeah. I would also say you have to watch him deal with a lot of like harrowing moments even before that. Like there's death throughout the beginning of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Like Mad-Eye dies and they have to basically just power through it.
Yeah.
And Hedwig dies.
Hedwig dies.
And he has no time to mourn.
And he has no time to process or grieve.
He's just like, no, Hedwig.
Yeah.
And then Hagrid gets zapped by whatever, like, and he's like, well, shit, now I gotta take care of Hagrid. Yep. And it's like,
yeah. You also, at the beginning, you get some good Hagrid Harry time, which you haven't had
since maybe three.
Some quality Hagrid Harry.
And some in four.
There's some in four, but it's not.
But like, Hagrid's more distracted by his lady friend.
Yes.
His lady friend.
Yeah. So I would say that, yeah, there's a lot of. When it comes to acting, that's my biggest thing, I think, with this is Daniel Radcliffe is very... He gives a lot to his scene partners.
Mm-hmm.
He would be a very good improv comedian because he would...
Yes.
But, like, he's really only as good as the people he's acting against. And so I think he's got a lot of really good moments to act with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, between... The scene that really captured my attention watching it again this last time was once they apparate out of the ministry and Ron's arm is splinched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just that frantic, frenetic energy that he keeps giving to Hermione that I think it's... I always forget, like, why do I not think about this? Like, there's something new every single time, and that just... It seems very raw, and it's something that's easily forgettable, I think, in that movie. Because it's like, okay, you know, he's going to be fine. They're going to take care of it by, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But everything seems more tense and more vulnerable, I think, even little things. And he does that very well with the rest of the people and the rest of the cast in that movie. I also think of him comforting Hermione. The dance, I think, you know, not spoken. It's a very... silent performance.
That's a beautiful
but it's
yeah.
It's beautiful. The trio, music selection.
The trio and the reactions to what they get from Dumbledore's will is a good scene as well. Just like watching their confusion.
Yeah, when he gets the scene, she's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah. And then Hermione gets the book and Ron's just like, oh, I love that when I was a kid. And everyone just kind of looks at him. And Ron's like, what? Babbity rabbity. The pumping stump. Come on. And everyone's like, what are you talking about?
The two muggle raised children are like,
What?
Yeah.
Although I find it hard to believe that Hermione was not familiar with them.
Also very, very unfortunately short performance by Bill Nighy as Rufus Scrimgeour.
Yeah.
But for the two scenes he is in, I absolutely love him.
Mm. Yeah.
He gave you the Sword of Gryffindor.
It was not
that
his,
was not his
to give away. That's the way he says.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
So yeah, it was a hard decision. As I thought about this, if Chamber of Secrets had stayed last week, it would definitely be gone this week, and I would rather do that than cut part two, because I do think there are some good emotionally poignant moments. Like that scene between Alan Rickman and Daniel Radcliffe is such a good one.
See, but even to me, that's more on Alan Rickman than it is on Daniel Radcliffe, because he's like standing there sad. But like Alan Rickman's just when the memories are coming out and he's just like, take them. And he looks at him and he's like, look at me, you have your mother's eyes. And it's like, that to me is Alan Rickman's moment. And like, yes, yes, Daniel Radcliffe is reacting well, but it's like that's.
But I would say that like
that's sometimes more Alan Rickman
that's more scene. Alan Rickman's scene.
It's and more it's, Alan Rickman's scene, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad.
No, Harry. It's not like, bad. No, I'm just saying that's not necessarily a standout, at least to me from that film. Like to me in that film, him walking through the forest is maybe a standout. His whole sequence with Dumbledore in King's the Cross.
Dumbledore is really good. It's kind of his last moment to ever be naive or ever
and that's
questions.
That's very much his last like Harry moment. Is it's him with his like his most trusted teacher. Kind of as a final farewell.
Him reacting to the little dead Voldemort fetus, just being like, ugh.
Yeah. But it's like, it's one of those things of him being like.
He should have just punted it.
And if you think about the implications of that scene, it's like the spirit of Dumbledore saying like, well, you can either go help your friends or you can just
die
and live at peace. And he's like, what do I do? So.
Yeah. It's, the thing I wish we got more of in that was I wish we got a better Harry McGonagall moment in there just because to wrap up the series.
You get a little bit of that in the Great Hall.
Yeah.
When she's about to duel Snape, like he's talking to her beforehand, but it's,
She tells them it's good to see them or what.
And then she
I'm
sends.
I'm glad you're back or whatever it is.
Then she sends all the Slytherin kids to the dungeon, even though it's only a couple of them that are troublesome.
Yeah, it's more hedging our bets, but that was
maybe a writing moment.
That
once
has
again.
Always stuck out to me as being like all of them are bad.
Like that's always bugged.
Like surely there's just a regular kid who is just like
Slytherin.
Just
determined,
a little
ambitious and determined. He got into Slytherin.
Yeah, who maybe shirks ethics a little. Like he'll open up a great like competitor wand shop and run some like maybe not okay marketing against Ollivander, but like. Like he's a generally okay guy.
It has bugged me throughout the entire series why Slytherin is even a fucking house at Hogwarts. If literally everyone hates it, apparently everybody that's in it is evil and terrible. It's like,
even though, like
then why do you fucking have it then? Since
though, like,
nobody wants to be in it.
You got two heroes who are Slytherin. So like Snape, Slytherin, Slughorn, Slytherin.
Like, it's like, okay, but then it's like, oh, Snape's like... an antagonist throughout the entire series, but then it's like, oh, he turns out to be good, but then he's a traitor, but then he kind of redeems himself, and it's like, Snape is a really gray area. Slughorn ran off like a punk, but it's like, literally in the very beginning of the entire series, Harry's there like, you know what, I don't want to be in Slytherin,
because
Malfoy's in Slytherin, Malfoy is terrible, Crabbe and Goyle are terrible, I don't want to be in Slytherin, and Sorting Hat's like, not Slytherin. Okay, I'll put you in the best one with your friends, because, you know, only the good people go to Gryffindor.
I mean...
And then just the entire series is nothing but Slytherin's bad, and so it's like, why is it a house if it's apparently so terrible?
I think at the end of the day, it's a children's book and a children's series.
Well, and I mean, if it sticks with you so much, there's a wonderful staged play that also deals with a lot of things.
Like, I actually read the synopsis for The Cursed Child the other day, and I was like, damn, I actually like this a lot.
I would recommend picking it up because it's a quick read because it's a play. But it's
there's a lot of stuff I was like, oh damn,
there are, as a house
there's some
kind of
weird stuff in it that I'm not a huge fan of, but there are some other things that I love in it.
A second thought you were talking about a Harry Potter musical,
which
has the line
also,
that is also good.
It is good.
What the good guys hell go to, is a Hufflepuff?
Well, actually, a Hufflepuff.
All right, let's rein it back in here.
They're good finders. They're particularly good finders. Yeah, so the good guys go to Gryffindor, the bad guys go to Slytherin, the rest of you can go wherever the hell you want. But no, Deathly Hallows Part 2, in the end, not as good as Part 1. It pains me to say that. So does that mean we're finding our fourth and fifth at Part 1 followed by Part 2? Is that where...
Shannon?
That's where it's
this is
shaking
the
out.
Most devastating to you, but...
It's fine. No, I mean,
All right, so they're all very good. Part one's at 4.
And part two
is at 5.
What did everybody else have at 5?
Deathly
Hallows Part 2.
Oh. I had Chamber of Secrets.
Oh.
I don't know why everyone is talking over me and just making assumptions for me here.
Good. I brought it back and I said.
Brought it back just to knock it back down.
Get the fuck back.
Brought it
back up, hit it, was like, welcome to the NFL.
But now that like this honestly was kind of a toss up because like with part two, I was like, yes, there is a good stuff, but nothing that we haven't seen before and doesn't really there's no real growth. It doesn't really like add a whole lot, but there's just, it's still a good performance. And with Chamber of Secrets, it was kind of the same thing, comparing it to Sorcerer's Stone, where it's like, yes, but like it's good, but it's still young Harry Potter. It was literally just like a hair's breadth away. And like, I gave Chamber of Secrets the edge over Deathly Hallows Part 2, just because like he interacts with Dobby and CGI creatures so much, and he does it so well. It's kind of like we were talking about earlier, just he's there acting against tennis balls on sticks for the majority of that movie.
For which one?
Chamber of Secrets.
Well, it's out, you know.
What?
Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, I know. I was talking about
it. Oh, just in general?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Carter?
I'm just confused as to why it came up.
Oh, because it was
fresh on your mind.
Because I had it at number 5, and we were talking about establishing the fifth.
Well, it got voted off last week.
Oh, shit. What, fucking, am I losing my mind?
Yeah, it got voted off last week. That's why we're like.
God damn, sorry,
like, why are
my
you
bad.
Talking about
oh,
it?
Shit,
I thought this was a bit. Brett, oh, you God. Can play this
I'm sorry, everybody. Holy shit. I haven't gotten a whole lot of sleep lately. I'm sorry,
No,
guy.
You're good.
You're good.
We only had 5 this week.
God damn.
In order
now,
of,
now the world knows I'm an idiot.
In book order, so. Sorcerer's Stone, Prisoner of Azkaban, Order of the Phoenix, Hallows Part 1 and Part 2. So, what's your number 5 now, Brett?
Oh, shoot, sorry, it's Part 2, yeah.
Okay.
God, I'm sorry, guys. I'm really
No, nervous. You're all good. You're good. So that settles it. Chamber of Secrets is leaving again. No, but in all seriousness, our ranking this week, number 1, we have Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Number 2, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Number 3, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Number 4, the Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. And number 5, and getting touched by a 12-year-old and turned into ash, or maybe more appropriately for this movie, getting hit with an Expelliarmus after a long, hard-fought battle and disintegrating while kind of hissing into the wind. The Deathly Hallows Part 2 will be leaving us this week. Good episode, guys. Good job. Good job, everybody. We've got 4 movies left. The season seems so young, but we're already nearing the end. So let's do our recommendations and our goodbyes. And oh, actually, before we do any of our recommendations or stuff, I just wanted to give a shout out to all of you guys listening to this episode, listening to the show in general. This last week, before this episode came out, we passed our 5,000th download, which is a huge milestone for
mm-hmm.
us.
Woo, yeah.
And we couldn't do this without your support. We absolutely love doing this. We have a lot of fun doing this. But it's made better every time that I see that little ticker go up that somebody else is just getting a little joy added to their day with a new episode of Film Fracas. So thank you for, listening and supporting us for nearly a year at this point. We are coming up on our 1-year anniversary very, very soon. But yeah, it makes me real happy to see that people are listening and people are having a lot of fun listening. So thank you guys so much for that. And beyond that, make sure you follow us on all our social media.
Buy our merch.
Buy our merch if you
still up there.
If you want us, we have new merch up there.
Yeah,
we have good new merch that has Shannon's name on it. Finally,
Aww.
You can buy you can buy shirts that actually have all of our general names on them. So you have the whole effing shirt that says the whole effing show on the back. If you want to say that Carter's your favorite host, if you want,
which I am.
Got one that says The Rock. We got one that says
he's my favorite host.
Live Wire. We have one that says
she's all right.
What is my nickname now that I'm saying them out loud?
The main man.
The main man. There we go. And of course,
I don't care for him.
The one that I would buy is the Party Zamboni.
That's an excellent one.
It is very good. So, thanks for listening to me. Spill all my gratitudes out there. Follow us. If you don't want to buy merch, if you don't think you look good in t-shirts, there are ways to support us directly through our
That's
anchor
a lie.
Page.
You do look good on t-shirts, and with t-shirts, in t-shirts.
Come
on.
Yeah. But
layer up.
That's also an option. We never would ask you guys just to give us money for fun.
I mean,
unless
you
really
want
to. Like, that's that not, is an option. We're not going to push for it.
We all have Venmo.
Yeah. Everyone, give them your Cash App. Yeah. No. That being said, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Robbie_DeShazer. You can find me on Letterboxd at Robbie5208. I haven't posted there in a while, but I want to get back in the game.
You should post on Letterboxd.
Yes. This week, I'm going to recommend the documentary Merchants of Doubt. It's a 2014 documentary directed by Robert Kenner, who directed Food, Inc., which is a very popular documentary since it got, you know, all of it's available streaming just about everywhere. Based on the book by the same name, it traces the public relations tactics that were developed by the tobacco industry that were then used by climate change deniers and in one really weird instance, the flame retardant community to keep it in furniture so that, you know, even though it was killing people.
Mm-hmm.
So just a really interesting watch. Not an easy watch by any means. It will get your blood boiling, I think, regardless of which side, just to see how much people know and are willing to, you know, just openly lie to the American public. But it's a really good film. I don't know if it's available for streaming anywhere. I rented it for a class, but that's I highly recommend
you
it.
Can
it's great.
Rent it.
You can rent it on Amazon.
That's streaming.
Yeah,
just costs money.
Just costs money. So there you go. Enjoy your week.
All right, y'all. You can follow me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. This week, I'm going to be recommending the first episode of Netflix's Russian Doll. It's a trip.
I've heard it's good.
Quite literally, yes. Natasha Lyonne is the protagonist, if you want to call her that, in this show. She's got a very kind of eclectic, electric, brash performance that works really, really, really well with the subject matter. And yeah, it's really cool. It's something new. I don't really watch a lot of Netflix original series, but I've been impressed with the last few that I've seen. So you should definitely give it a watch. I think it's also being produced by
Amy Poehler?
Amy Poehler. And it's got a creative group of all women, it looks like. So yeah, go women. It's very exciting. But yeah, throw some support out there. Use your Netflix account. Give it a watch. Let me know what you think.
Carter Spilliards.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like spill something yard and an S. My recommendation this week is a movie that's not out yet. I got to see it early. How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. How to Train Your Dragon 3. Same thing. Go watch it. It comes out February 22nd. If you're a fan of said How to Train Your Dragon films, it is very good. It's to me, it was, you know, a very suitable ending to this trilogy. They're all very consistently good movies, which is impressive. You don't normally get trilogies of such a consistent quality. And so if you like those, go and see it. It definitely has the, you know, the emotional payoff that you've been looking for. Yeah. Also, F. Murray Abraham voices the villain, and I like him a lot. He's actually really charismatic in it.
Do like F. Murray Abraham.
He's really good at
it. I would hope so.
Trilogies are hard.
Edward James Olmos isn't in it by chance, is he?
Edward James Olmos? No.
Damn. Someday I'll get a movie with the two of them.
I was going to say, for every The Mummy Returns, there's a Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. So to have a consistently good trilogy.
I was going to say, you've got like...
You got... The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith.
Hey, a consistent trilogy.
Consistently good. You got A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi.
Consistently good.
You got Captain America, The First Avenger. The third one's not good. Damn. Well, this tougher.
I like the third. You've got
it's not as good.
Star Wars: The Force Awakens. You got Star Wars: The Last Jedi, and wait for it. I'm revealing the name of the new Star Wars movie. Star Wars: The Porg Strikes Back, coming to theaters this December.
You are a liar, and you should feel bad about yourself.
It's not even that clever.
I'm a truth teller. You should, and I should feel great.
It's not even that clever. Come on.
I know.
You can do better.
I'm only as good as my improv.
Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
That's not a movie. as a musical.
Isn't it,
as a stage musical, Carter. Anywho, find me
he's
on
recommending
Twitter and Snapchat.
Spider-Man, turn off the dark.
At
know
the movie. Brett, J-H-N-S-N, number one. I'm going to be recommending the 1975 Dario Argento film Deep Red. It is
deep,
very good,
and red.
It's very red. There's a there's a whole lot of red
it's
in this
movie. Quite shallow and yellow.
It takes place in Rome, and this popular German psychic is murdered in her apartment after feeling that there's like a murderer in an audience where she gives a presentation, and so then this British jazz pianist like witnesses the murder. And so then it's about him trying to figure out what's going on, and it's really good.
This right. feels very my brand.
I will be checking it out. If you liked Suspiria, you'd probably like this.
I feel like I would like it. It sounds like something I would
like.
It's
good. I know Shannon's not a huge fan of the color red, so she
not so much, but
probably
I do like,
would not like this movie.
I am a fan of Suspiria and Argento.
There's one shot where it's just like all the walls of this room are like red. And I'm like, oh.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
But no, it's one of Argento's better films, so yeah, I highly recommend it.
What do you think of Inferno?
It's not great.
Okay.
Inferno's not that good. It's got a good soundtrack. I'll play there's a song I'll blast for you over the sound bar.
Yeah.
After the episode.
I heard there was like
Argento's actually like we could talk about Argento later. He's pretty hit and miss.
Yeah.
Well, all right then.
So yeah.
This has been a good fun episode of Film Fracas.
Well, it's been an episode of Film Fracas.
Yes, it has. We are so excited to bring you guys a beautiful episode next week with which we'll talk about. Is it Score next week?
Yes. Yeah. Score will be next week.
You
our
guys
final
know
four
what
films.
It is. It's a final four episode. We're talking
and our
about,
penultimate episode of the season.
Yes. So go ahead and let us know what you think of the score. Let us know what you think is going to win this season, honestly. And, you know, stay safe, have fun, keep listening, follow us on social media, do all the good things, live a good life. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Dracana Force.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thank you to Brett Johnson, Robbie DeShazer, and Carter Spilliards for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @FilmFracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.